Morning. Just in terms of you're one of those people that likes to sort of know where things are going and what's happening, Todd and Nico are in Cloverdale with Sam and Maddie Emerson this weekend. I think they were with Chad and Jenna last evening. And so you can pray for them as they minister there. And over these next 5 weeks, 6 weeks, we will look at this series called Affliction, which we'll explain in just a moment. And that will take us to Lent, which is to be starts with Ash Wednesday toward the end of February. And then throughout Lent, Todd intends to teach on the Lord's table for the 6 or 7 weeks of Lent. And that will then take us to Easter at the beginning of April. We will also have a catechism class that begins toward the end of February in preparation for baptism on Easter Sunday. So those are some of the things that we're working on over these next 12 weeks or so. Also hope to speak with Kenya this week and begin preparation for a trip to Kenya fall just after Easter. And so if that's something that's in your heart, I'd love to talk with you over the next weeks about that and start to see what God might have for us just after Easter. I want to take a reading from Matthew chapter 9 and starting with verse 36 this morning. The title of our series comes from this passage, and hopefully that will make sense to you as we go along. But Matthew chapter 9 and verse 36. And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, healing every disease and every affliction. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, for they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send laborers into his harvest." And he called to him his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out, to heal every disease and every affliction. Jesus is using the image of harvest in this passage. It's an image that becomes more and more removed from us, but was very clear to the people he was talking about because they lived in an agricultural world. And so everything was built around that cycle of planting, of tending and nurturing, and then eventually leading into harvest. So most of us are fairly removed from that. The closest we get to harvest is Safeway, maybe a little garden. So it's more distant for us. But for the people that Jesus was speaking to, harvest is absolutely clear. The whole point of the year is to move to harvest. The reason you would do anything at all in a year would be in anticipation of the harvest that's to come. And so it made me think of growing up, and although my parents weren't farmers, my extended family were. And there was, my dad particularly, his heart stayed on the farm. And so there was something about him every fall that wanted to get back to harvest. There was something in him that understood that's what the year was about, that we'd get back to harvest. And so we would often go to my uncle's in the fall and ride along and watch the beets fall into the hopper or watch them combining and just enjoy the beauty of that season. This time of celebration and joy was hard work, but it came with this tone of crisp celebration and just taking in sort of freely and easily the results of the year's work. And so that's the description that this passage starts with. It says Jesus was walking throughout the cities and villages, teaching, proclaiming the gospel, healing every disease and every affliction. It's this very easy, joyful, great time. It's harvest. It's like Jesus passing out gospel gumdrops at the Coaldale Candy Parade. It's just free and liberal, and there's people everywhere, and it's just being gobbled up. It's a party. It's wonderful. It's joyful. That's what Jesus is trying to communicate when he says there's harvest. It's this time of plenty, of reward, of celebration. The whole reason we would enter into anything is that we would anticipate a harvest. A few weeks ago, before Christmas, Psalm 126 had some weight for us as a body. That's what the message of 126 is. It says, he who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. This is what harvest looks like. It's anticipation. It's just gathering in this abundance and of seeing immediate reward for your effort. Over the last year, we've gotten to know Dan and Lisa a bit. Dan works in our discipleship school. And Dan, if you follow his Instagram account at least, has a bit of an obsession with food. And it falls into two categories, as I've noticed. Weird food and really good food. And it wasn't that many weeks ago that Dan posted, late into the autumn, harvest. The last tomato from his greenhouse. Late into November, but he was celebrating the harvest. And he was proclaiming the virtues of this tomato. How it had no comparison with the tomatoes you'd picked up at your harvest at Safeway. But consider for a moment if Dan, as he prepares his greenhouse this spring, goes to the to buy plants, and somebody says to him, why don't you try this variety of tomato? A variety he hasn't tried before. And he buys one of those plants and plants it in his greenhouse, and it starts to grow, and it looks as healthy or stronger than the other plants, and there are little blossoms on it, but then no fruit. It doesn't matter what he's doing, the same thing, there's fruit on all the other plants, but not on that plant. How long do you think it is before Dan takes that plant out? He's not even going to wait till next season to say, well, I guess that's not a good variety for this climate or this soil. He's going to take it out immediately because the whole point of his effort is that he would have a harvest, that he would be able to celebrate with his family and enjoy that final tomato sandwich of the season. So why, when I read this passage, and and we meet together as a team and we say we're going to have a series on mission, do I have the opposite response? Why is there no celebration, anticipation, and joy in my heart? Why is it that as for most of us in the church in Canada, we have worked hard, we can talk about efforts to plant and to tend and to grow things and to establish structures, but how come so few of us have experienced harvest? We all know and agree that the good news of the gospel is not just for us, it's for everyone else. We have prepared and learned and strategized and studied the book of Romans or whatever else you want to talk about. And yet we have seldom can point to a time in which we enjoyed the extravagance of a harvest. That we have not seen plenty. That we have not received reward for our effort. And so as I've worked on this series over the last week, there's been an increased anger and frustration in my heart to say, why in all of my adult life have I not seen harvest? And what I've called harvest has been, at best, picking up the scraps along the side of the road. And that when I think about the word harvest, that I'm aware that in my heart arises some things that aren't anything that don't mesh with that picture at all. That harvest brings for my heart a picture of high standards and yet my own failure. And so I feel shame and guilt about that. That I can think about all kinds of ideas I've had about harvest. I can think that through. I can write things out. I can attend seminars and classes. But all my knowledge is here and none of it is here. That when Todd says, let's spend a series and invite people to hear the gospel, I feel pressure and not freedom. That there is fear instead of joy. And I come to this place in anxiety rather than in peace. Where have we been in that place before? Where have we been in a place of standing and feeling like we're trapped, where we're in bondage, where we've looked at it from all the different angles and we've tried all of our best efforts without any results? That's where we all were before we entered the healing journey, before we understood the message of the gospel and that it made a difference in our lives. And we've started, that's what's changed in all of our lives, who've walked with us even for even as little as the last year, to realize that the message of the truth of Jesus is what sets us free. That there can be peace instead of anxiety. And so it seems to me that before we can understand what it means to enter into harvest, we must have some healing of our hearts around the gospel and around this message. That somehow, in spite of us churning and working and grappling and messing around with this thing, for many of us all of our lives, we have not seen Jesus in it. And it looks exactly like our lives did in lots of areas of affliction. That's exactly how my life was 10 years ago, before healing. Wanting to know God, but doing it all myself. Jesus not being in it in any way that I could figure out. And sort of coming to a place of saying, well, I don't get it, but it's not working. And that somehow in the Western Christianity, the enemy has been successful in pulling us into some backwater around harvest and depriving us of the things we should have expected. A time of rejoicing and celebration and plenty and of harvest. And much of this bondage for me comes out of these particular words of Jesus. He says to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. I must have heard this passage preached at least once a week for 3 years of Bible college. And the consistent message from this passage was this. God's made a harvest. The reason we don't have one is because you won't be sent. And Jesus' words became for me an accusation. I made all kinds of harvest. Where's the people who would harvest with me? Are there none? And yet we've learned some things in the healing journey. That when I hear accusation in something, I best make a careful determination before I assign that voice to God. I don't think that's what Jesus is saying at all in this passage. I think he is saying, as he looks at the crowds and the response that the message of the gospel is having, we're going to need more workers. But I don't think he's saying something about harvest forever and ever. That the problem always is that you guys won't labor. That's not his point. I say that because the problem of too few laborers is solved almost immediately. That the Father grants their request and 12 disciples are assigned and sent out to help with the harvest. Immediately. Go on and read the rest of chapter 10. Jesus' point is not one of accusation and pressure and somehow some kind of a twisted commission. Get out there and harvest. His main message that he wants us to understand is this. The Father is the Lord of the harvest. He has authority over the harvest. He has authority over the laborers. He is in charge of everything. The main thing that Jesus' first response to seeing a whole group of people that were ready to hear the gospel was to say, this needs to happen under the authority of the Father. He is the Lord of the harvest. And so Jesus' statement is not some admonition for us to pick up an assignment that other people have dropped, but rather an invitation to say, will you submit yourself to the Lord of the harvest? Would you submit yourself to the Lord of the harvest, and would you see what the Lord of the harvest sees? Jesus saw the crowds the way the Father saw them. And he was prompted to ask for more help in the harvest because he saw a whole host of people who he described in this way, as afflicted, harassed, and helpless. This is what a harvest looks like. A group of people who are afflicted. Someone who says, I can't believe I'm always being tripped up by that same thing. That same situation, that same relationship, I'm always being tripped up by it. It's people who are harassed and troubled, who are saying, I don't know what else to do in my relationship with my spouse. Doesn't matter what I try, it seems to end in disaster and argument and hurt feelings. Harvest looks like helplessness. It's saying, it's a sense of dejection or being ready to throw in the towel and saying, well, I just don't know what else to do. Affliction, harassment, helplessness. Harvest comes when the pain of the present becomes big enough to motivate us to do something about it, to try something else. You understand those symptoms. Because we have all of us who have been on this healing journey understand affliction, harassment, and helplessness. It's what prompted us to start our own healing journey. Because we all came in some aspect of our life to a place where we said, this isn't working. I'm giving this my best effort, but I can't keep doing it this way. Why after 20 years of marriage do we still always have this one affliction that we can't somehow figure out? And we got past our own efforts and our own pride and our own solutions and said, Jesus, what do you have to say? And we started to apply the truth of what Jesus says to those areas. And we received freedom and peace and joy. We received some harvest. And so it's not difficult, it will not be difficult for us to recognize what harvest looks like, because it will look like us. And not only will it look like the same kinds of afflictions and harassments and sense of frustration that we felt in particular areas of life, but I want to suggest to you that your harvest will come specifically in the area of your own affliction. That it's in the place of our own affliction that the gospel, that the person and work of Jesus has been revealed to you in a unique and specific way. That in your healing journey, whatever your particular thing is, your addiction, your wanting to work, your difficulty in a marriage, it's in that place that Jesus has been revealed to you in a way that's unique in this room. That you know something about Jesus in that area that none of the rest of us know. And your harvest is going to come specifically in that area. And so I suggest to you that harvest looks like finding people who are afflicted just like you were. And that harvest means telling your story of what did Jesus do with your affliction. This is what you are ready for. This is what this journey has been all about. Is that your freedom, the healing that you have found, even if it's just at the beginning, it's exactly in those places that you will be now used as a laborer in the harvest to tell your story to someone else. And God is already, as Lord of the harvest, is putting people into your lives, into your path, and you can say, oh, I recognize that affliction. That's just like me. And his invitation will be to you, tell them your story. And the beauty of your story is that it's your story. It's not my story. You don't have to learn my ideas, my journey. You just have to tell your story. You don't have to prep for that. You've lived it. You were there. You remember. And you can bring the beauty of the gospel into people's lives in exactly the same areas that you have been set free in. The places in which God has been revealed to you as a loving Father with beautiful, extravagant gifts for you, given freely and without any restraint. And so over these next 5 weeks, we have chosen a part, at least from Ryan and my own journey, some of the common afflictions. And we want to talk with you and with the people in your lives that you would bring along with you about common afflictions and say, this is how Jesus breaks the things that are breaking you. On your way out, you're going to get a little bookmark like this, and they're listed there. But they're really everyday, ordinary afflictions. Every day we meet people that said the same things that we said in the past. I can't escape my past. That's just how it is. My family's always been angry. Talk to my dad. I can't get away from that. They're trapped by who they think they are. We want to talk about people who are saying, I'm just exhausted. I can't keep this up anymore. I'm working and striving and but I never make the mark. I never am successful. I never catch a break. I'm just exhausted. We want to talk about how Jesus sets people free from addictions and self-destructive behavior. People who are saying in our worlds every day, I don't know, I can't stop myself. We want to talk about how does Jesus enter into relationships. How does he become a solution when you say, well, I'm done. I can't keep doing this anymore. I don't know what to do with that kid. I don't know what to do with that spouse. I got to find a new job. I can't take that boss anymore. And we want to talk about what does Jesus have to say about the very real spiritual forces that people encounter in their lives that are against them, that accuse them, that freak them out. And they don't even have words to describe what's going on in their homes and in their sleep and in their dreams. And we say, no, Jesus has the answer for this. But what's our first step on this journey? The first step is to do what Jesus commands his disciples to do. And he says, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest. And that, for me, what that means primarily is to say that this morning I would call you to place yourself under the authority of the Lord of the harvest. And that as we move to the Lord's table, you would come forward with that as the primary picture in your mind, that you are coming forward under and in submission to the Lord of the harvest. And that you might hear Him during our time of confession. He might speak to you about the lies that you have accepted and come into agreement with around harvest. That the place in which your heart is discouraged and disappointed, where you gave up hope that you would ever see a harvest, where you took on guilt and shame and said, well, I must just not be good enough. I can't do that right. Maybe it's only for the pastors. Where you have carried the weight of saying, well, I guess I'm responsible for the harvest. What's the particular way in which the accuser has distorted something about harvest in your heart? And that once the Holy Spirit would identify that in your heart, you would take that next step and say, so Jesus, what do you want to say? I lay down that lie. I break that agreement. I repent of that stance towards you. What would you give me in return? And that faith and hope might once again enter our heart about harvest. That we could have expectation. That we could think about it from a place of plenty rather than a place of lack. And that we would allow the Holy Spirit to press those things deep into our hearts. And that as our heart becomes alive, as it is healed in this area of harvest, our hearts would begin to respond like Jesus' heart. And that when He saw the crowds of people, He had compassion upon them because He saw their affliction, their harassment, and their helplessness. And that our hearts would begin to be broken with the things that break Jesus' heart. That the person that you've been avoiding, that you would see them in a new way. That you would see them through Jesus' eyes. And that you would understand the affliction. And that your heart would be moved to compassion. And that we would then submit ourselves to the Lord of the harvest and say, Lord, when you are ready to release me into harvest, I am ready. And that we might see in our city a harvest. That we might reap, that we might come into possession of the thing that we were always meant to have. The whole point of all of this is that we might celebrate, enjoy, and revel in the beauty of a harvest. Ryan's going to come and lead us to the table.